The following program is not a production of Audio Journal. External programs like this are selected with the interests of our audience in mind and with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed in this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
Hello, my name is Lily, and today I will be reading the diabetes update. We're starting off with this article from the CDC titled, 10 Surprising Things That Can Spike Your Blood Sugar. When you first found out you had diabetes, you tested your blood sugar often. This helped you understand how food, activity, stress, and illness could affect your blood sugar levels. Even now that you know the ups and downs, some causes of blood sugar spikes may surprise you. Do you know all of these blood sugar triggers? Number 1, sunburn. The pain causes stress, and stress increases blood sugar levels. 2, artificial sweeteners. More research is needed, but some studies show they can raise blood sugar. Number 3, coffee. Even without sweetener, some people's blood sugar is extra sensitive to caffeine. 4. Losing sleep. Even just one night of too little sleep can make your body use insulin less well. 5. Skipping breakfast. Going without that morning meal can increase blood sugar after both lunch and dinner. 6. Time of day. Blood sugar can be harder to control the later it gets. 7. Dawn phenomenon. People have a surge in hormones early in the morning, whether they have diabetes or not. For people with diabetes, blood sugar can spike. 8. Dehydration. Less water in your body means your blood sugar is more concentrated. 9. Nose spray. Some have chemicals that trigger your liver to make more blood sugar. And 10. Gum disease. It's both a complication of diabetes and a blood sugar spiker. Watch out for other triggers that can make your blood sugar fall. For example, extreme heat can cause blood vessels to dilate or widen. That makes insulin absorb more quickly and could lead to low blood sugar. If an activity or food is new, check your blood sugar before and after to see how you respond. This next article also comes from the CDC, titled, The Offenders of Diabetes. The biggest offenders that affect diabetes, both in terms of increasing risk for type 2 diabetes and causing blood sugar spikes in those who have it, are primarily foods high in refined carbohydrates, added sugars, and unhealthy fats. Other significant factors include lifestyle choices and genetics. Dietary offenders. Foods that significantly impact blood sugar control include 1. Sugary beverages. Regular sodas, fruit juices, even 100% fruit juice due to lack of fiber, energy drinks, and sweetened teas are rapidly absorbed, causing immediate and significant blood sugar spikes. Refined grains. White bread, white rice, regular pasta, and many breakfast cereals have a high glycemic index because the fiber has been removed during processing. This leads to quick digestion and rapid increases in blood glucose levels. Number 3. Baked goods and pastries. Items like donuts, cakes, cookies, and sweet rolls are often made with white flour, high in sugar, and contain unhealthy fats, a combination that can lead to significant blood sugar fluctuations. Next is fried and fast foods. These are high in unhealthy saturated and trans fats and calories, contributing to weight gain and worsening insulin resistance, where the body's cells don't respond properly to insulin. Processed meats, bacon, sausages, hot dogs, and deli meats are often high in sodium and unhealthy fats, which increase the risk of heart disease, a condition people with diabetes are already at higher risk for. Candy and sweets. These provide little to no nutritional value and are essentially pure sugar, causing sharp blood sugar spikes. Next is lifestyle and other risk factors. Beyond diet, several other factors are major contributors to the development and management of type 2 diabetes. Overweight or obesity. This is the single biggest modifiable risk factor for developing type 2 diabetes, as excess body fat, especially around the waist, contributes to insulin resistance. Physical inactivity. A sedentary lifestyle increases the risk, as regular physical activity helps the body regulate blood glucose levels more effectively. Genetics and family history. Having a parent or sibling with type 2 diabetes significantly increases your potential risk. Age and ethnicity. The risk increases with age, typically over 45 for type 2, and certain ethnic backgrounds have a higher predisposition. High blood pressure and cholesterol. These health conditions, are often linked with diabetes and increase the risk of related complications such as cardiovascular disease. Managing these factors through your diet, exercise, and medical consultation can help control blood sugar levels and reduce the risk of diabetes complications. For personalized dietary guidance, it is recommended to consult with a doctor or registered dietitian. Next up, this comes from Medical News. This article is titled, DASH Diet for Hypertension May Also Prevent Diabetes Complications. The burden of diabetes worldwide continues to increase. In 2021, 529 million people had diabetes, and that number is projected to rise to more than 1.31 billion by 2050. According to the World Health Organization, 95% have type 2 diabetes, a condition in which the body stops responding to insulin, the hormone that controls blood glucose or sugar levels. People with type 2 diabetes are recommended to follow a healthy diet and exercise, together with medications such as metformin and GLP-1 agonists, such as semaglutide or tirzepatide, to control their blood glucose. If blood glucose is not controlled, complications of type 2 diabetes can lead to high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, kidney disease, nerve damage, eyesight problems, and foot problems. Now, a review of the recent research published in Frontiers in Nutrition has found that one particular dietary approach, the DASH diet, or dietary approaches to stop hypertension, can reduce a person's risk of such complications. Thomas M. Holland, MD, MS, a physician scientist and assistant professor at the Rush Institute for Healthy Aging, Rush University College of Health Sciences, who was not involved in the review, told Medical News Today, quote, "These findings are important because they show that the DASH diet, which was originally designed to lower blood pressure, also improves several of the biological pathways that drive complications in type 2 diabetes. Scientifically, the diet's mix of high potassium, magnesium, calcium, fiber, and healthy fats, along with low sodium, added sugars, and saturated fats, reduces vascular stiffness, calms inflammation, and supports healthier kidney filtration and blood vessel function. This means the DASH diet helps protect the organs that diabetes tends to wear down over time, especially the heart, kidneys, eyes, and blood vessels. The DASH diet was designed to prevent and control high blood pressure, hypertension. However, researchers found that as well as lowering blood pressure in people with type 2 diabetes, it had many other beneficial effects. Overweight and obesity are closely associated with type 2 diabetes, and researchers found that the DASH diet was particularly effective in lowering blood pressure in people with these conditions. The diet regulated sodium-potassium balance, improved endothelial function, and reduced inflammation, all of which contribute to lowering blood pressure. When combined with time-restricted eating, the effects were even greater. The diet also improved blood lipid or fat levels, helping to reduce the likelihood of microvascular disease, a condition that affects the smallest blood vessels in the heart, brain, kidneys, and eyes, and is responsible for many of the complications of type 2 diabetes. For blood glucose control, the researchers investigated how the DASH diet affected HbA1c, glycated hemoglobin, the standard measure of glucose control. They found that although the diet had only a modest effect on HbA1c, it enhanced insulin signaling, thereby reducing insulin resistance and fasting plasma glucose. DASH also reduced the risk of diabetic neuropathy, a common effect of type 2 diabetes, which leads to pain, numbness, and even loss of limbs in women who followed the diet closely. The DASH eating plan is flexible, balanced eating plan that emphasizes heart-healthy foods. The diet focuses on controlling portion sizes, lowering intake of sodium, and eating foods that are high in magnesium, calcium, and potassium, eating lots of vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans, nuts, seeds, and vegetable oils, including fat-free or low-fat dairy products, fish, and poultry, but reducing intake of fatty meats, full-fat dairy products, and coconut, palm kernel, and palm oils, and finally, limiting intake of sugar and sweets. The DASH diet improved glucose and lipid metabolism, insulin sensitivity, and cardiovascular health, all of which are linked to reduced complications of type 2 diabetes. Many factors of the diet are responsible for its beneficial effects, as Holland explained. Quote, "The DASH diet targets multiple physiologic stressors at the same time, and these effects translate into protections people can actually feel and understand. For example, eating less sodium and more potassium-rich foods helps blood vessels relax and reduces blood pressure, easing strain on the kidneys, eyes, and small vessels commonly damaged in diabetes. High fiber from fruits, vegetables, and whole grains slows how fast glucose enters the bloodstream, feeds beneficial gut bacteria, and lowers cholesterol, acting like a slow-release system that softens blood sugar spikes. Replacing saturated fats with fish, nuts, and plant oils improves cell membrane health and reduces vascular inflammation, making arteries less prone to clogging," he added. The researchers emphasized that the effects of the diet are greater than might be seen through taking supplements, as the different elements of the diet work together to modulate metabolic disorders and reduce the likelihood of complications in people with type 2 diabetes. They suggested that it is the antioxidant and anti-inflammatory properties of the diet that help protect those with metabolic disorders, such as type 2 diabetes, from further complications. Holland agreed, noting that, quote, "One key takeaway is that the DASH diet works because it is a whole dietary pattern, not a single nutrient tweak, and this aligns with the evidence from Frank Sachs's earlier and later works, showing that isolating individual features matters less than full dietary structure. People with type 2 diabetes could really benefit from following the DASH diet," said Holland, though he added some light caveats. Quote, "The DASH diet should be recommended for most people with type 2 diabetes, but with the right expectations. Biologically, the diet improves blood pressure, reduces inflammation, protects kidney function, and enhances lipid metabolism, all of which target the major drivers of diabetes-related complications. These mechanisms translate to real-world benefits, better kidney labs, lower cardiovascular risk, and fewer downstream problems, even if the diet itself does not always produce dramatic short-term drops in hemoglobin A1C. That is from Thomas M. Holland, MD, MS. At the same time, he cautioned that while, quote, "generally the DASH diet is very safe for most people, but people with kidney issues or those on glucose-lowering medications should have a conversation with the doctor if they are going to change their diets, as they may need closer follow-up and some personalization might be required." Next up is this article from the Sao Paulo State Research Foundation titled, "Natural Hormone Unlocks a Hidden Fat-Burning Switch." Studies in mice have shown that a hormone produced in the intestine can send signals to the brain and influence how much energy the body uses. This hormone, called FGF19, or fibroblast growth factor 19, activates processes that help the body spend more energy, use stored fat as fuel, and improve weight control and blood glucose levels in obese animals. Research linked these effects to the action of FGF19 in the hypothalamus, a key brain region that receives information from the rest of the body and the environment to coordinate energy metabolism. They found that when FGF19 signals in the hypothalamus, it boosts the activity of the thermogenic adipocytes, fat cells that burn energy to produce heat, which are specialized fat cells that help the body generate heat instead of storing calories. New paths for obesity and diabetes treatments. Because of these findings, the scientists believe that FGF19 could inspire new medications for obesity, diabetes, and other metabolic conditions. The idea is to develop compounds that imitate the behavior of natural substances in the body, mimicking the action of endogenous compounds, or those produced by the body itself. This strategy resembles the way some of the latest diabetes and obesity drugs work. Ozempic, for example, contains semaglutide, an ingredient that activates receptors mimicking the hormone GLP-1. By doing so, it sends satiety signals to the brain and helps patients feel full with less food. According to the study, FGF19 did more than change appetite or fat storage. The hormone also lowered peripheral inflammation and improved the animal's tolerance to cold. When the researchers blocked the sympathetic nervous system, however, these benefits disappeared. In further experiments, they observed that exposure to cold increased the expression of FGF19 receptors in the hypothalamus. Because the hypothalamus is crucial for maintaining body temperature, these results suggest that FGF19 may help the body adapt by coordinating energy balance and thermoregulation. FGF19, thermogenesis, and brain control of energy. FGF19 had already been linked to a reduction in food intake. Our work broke new ground by showing that it also plays an important role by acting on the hypothalamus and stimulating an increase in energy expenditure in white and brown adipose tissue, says Professor Helena Cristina de Lima Barbosa from the Obesity and Comorbidities Research Center at the State University of Campinas. In other words, in addition to controlling appetite, it stimulates thermogenesis. So, in terms of therapy associated with obesity, it'd make a lot of sense. The work has been described in detail in an article published in the American Journal of Physiology, Endocrinology, and Metabolism, where it was highlighted as a top article in May. Global Obesity Crisis and Urgent Health Targets. The World Atlas of Obesity 2025 warns that, if current trends continue, global health goals for this year will not be met. These targets include halting the rise in diabetes and obesity and cutting premature deaths from cardiovascular disease, chronic respiratory disease, and cancer by 25%, using 2010 as the reference year. The Atlas estimates that more than 1 billion people worldwide are currently living with obesity. If effective actions are not put in place, this number could surpass 1.5 billion by 2030. Obesity is already associated with about 1.6 million premature deaths each year from non-communicable diseases. In Brazil, around 31% of the population has obesity. In addition, between 40% and 50% of adults do not reach the recommended levels of physical activity in terms of frequency or intensity. Where FGF19 comes from and how it works. FGF19, which is involved in the control of energy metabolism, is mainly produced in the small intestine. In the liver, it regulates the production of bile acids and also influences the synthesis of glucose and fats. While its primary roles in the liver have been widely explored in scientific literature, its effects in the brain have received much less attention. Quote, "In the lab, we work with bile acids, which are also the subject of my master's degree, and they regulate the release of FGF19. Our initial studies led us down this path." Zangirolamo told Agencia FAPESP. At 8 weeks of age, the mice used in the study were randomly assigned to two groups. One group received a standard diet, the control, and the other was fed a high-fat diet to reduce obesity. The researchers then administered FGF19 directly into the brains of the obese animals. All mice were kept in carefully controlled conditions of temperature, lighting, and access to water. In the article, the scientists report that central FGF19 signaling improved energy homeostasis. It did this by boosting the activity of the sympathetic nervous system and stimulating thermogenesis in adipose tissue, leading the tissue to consume more energy in the form of heat. Quote, "The brain plays an extremely important role in controlling the body's adiposity. At the same time, it receives information from peripheral tissues. It triggers commands. These commands, apparently using the sympathetic nervous system, seem to be an interesting way of thinking about energy expenditure," adds Barbosa. Digging deeper into brain cells and FGF19 receptors. To better understand which brain cells respond to FGF19, the authors compiled and examined public scRNA sequencing data from several studies of the hypothalamus. This method makes it possible to sequence RNA from individual cells, revealing which genes are active in each cell type. In total, the team evaluated transcription from more than 50,000 single cells to identify hypothalamic cell populations that express FGF19 receptors. The researchers note that a key question now is how to encourage the body to produce more FGF19 on its own. They're also working to connect these findings with what is already known about the neural circuits that regulate eating behavior. "We want to broaden this understanding. We're studying the hypothalamus to evaluate the inflammation commonly observed when a high-fat diet is administered and whether FGF19 plays a role in this area," says Zangirolamo, who did part of the work during an internship at the Joslin Diabetes Center at Harvard Medical School with Professor Yu-Hua Sang, who is also an author of the article. This next article comes from Medical News, titled, "New Ozempic Pill May Offer More Affordable Alternative to Injectables." Semaglutide is a glucagon-like peptide 1, or GLP-1, receptor agonist that mimics a hormone to increase insulin secretion, slow gastric emptying, and reduce appetite. The medication has Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, approval for helping with long-term weight management and treating type 2 diabetes. For many people, semaglutide is better known as the injectable drug Ozempic. However, many may not be aware that semaglutide has been available in oral form since it was approved by the FDA in 2019. After previously announcing a rebrand and reformulation to Rybelsus, the treatment more easily recognizable and bioavailable, Novo Nordisk announced that the Ozempic pill will be available for adults with type 2 diabetes in the United States starting in May, highlighting that the oral pill can help improve blood glucose control alongside diet and exercise, while also reducing major cardiovascular events in adults with type 2 diabetes at increased risk. The pharmaceutical company adds that the pill will be available through 70,000-plus U.S. pharmacies nationwide and select telehealth providers. Novo Nordisk's Rybelsus was the first oral GLP-1 receptor agonist product approved by the FDA for the treatment of type 2 diabetes. It was available in 3 mg, 7 mg, and 14 mg tablets. The oral pill was designed to help improve blood glucose control alongside diet and exercise, while also offering additional cardiometabolic benefits in certain high-risk patients. Now rebranded as the Ozempic pill, the updated formulation is available in different strengths of 1.5 mg, 4 mg, and 9 mg. In the press release, Novo Nordisk states that the Ozempic pill formulation is more bioavailable and works similarly to the Rybelsus tablets, offering the same efficacy and safety profile as the original formulation, but in a smaller pill. The pharmaceutical company adds that people should take the new formulation the same way as before, so that people who are taking 3 mg should now take 1.5 mg, and so on. While both injectable Ozempic and oral Rybelsus contain semaglutide and have approval for type 2 diabetes, Novo Nordisk suggests the brand name Ozempic is more synonymous with GLP-1 medications, hence the rename. While the oral form of semaglutide has been available for years as Rybelsus, the Ozempic branding is more widely recognized, which may lead to increased patient requests. Mir Ali, MD, bariatric surgeon and medical director of Memorial Care Surgical Weight Loss Center at Orange Coast Medical Center in Fountain Valley, California, told Medical News Today. Additionally, because the oral form has a longer shelf life, it may offer logistical advantages for certain prescribing patterns, Ali explained. Generally, research suggests that injectable semaglutide achieves significantly greater HbA1c reductions compared to oral forms in those with type 2 diabetes. Additionally, while the daily oral form may be preferable to weekly injections, research suggests that adverse events occur more frequently with oral semaglutide. Speaking to MNT, Ali noted the potential advantages and disadvantages of oral GLP-1 medications. Quote, "The primary advantage of oral GLP-1 medications are that they are easier to take, transport, and store. They are also typically less expensive to manufacture, which could lead to lower costs for patients. The disadvantages are that they are slightly less effective than injections and require daily instead of weekly administration." Novo Nordisk also outlined pricing arrangements they suggest will improve access to the Ozempic pill. For insured individuals, the medication may be available for $25 for up to a 3-month supply. Self-pay options available through Novo Nordisk's pharmacy and select telehealth providers are expected to range from approximately $149 to $299 per month, depending on dose strength, defining a month supply as one bottle of 30 pills. This may offer a cheaper alternative to injectable Ozempic, as while a 3-month supply may also be available for $25, self-pay patients can expect to pay $349 per month for doses up to 1 mg and $499 for the 2 mg dose. Pricing and insurance coverage are significant factors in medication adherence, Ali told MNT. High out-of-pocket expenses make patients less likely to seek or maintain treatment. Consequently, if costs remain high, individuals in lower socioeconomic areas with limited health coverage will face significant barriers to accessing these medications, he added. The rebrand of the Ozempic pill may reflect a broader shift in diabetes care toward GLP-1-based therapies, with the FDA approving Foundayo, an oral GLP-1 receptor agonist. While GLP-1-based therapies have traditionally been administered via injection, the oral formulations aim to provide a more convenient alternative for those who prefer not to use injectable medications. Novo Nordisk adds that the pill is manufactured end-to-end in the U.S. and will be widely distributed through established pharmacy networks. They also note that this is the first time oral semaglutide for type 2 diabetes is being offered through their direct-to-patient service. Quote, accessibility is critical, especially as these medications are in high demand and have faced shortages, Ali highlights. Lack of access often leads patients to switch to less effective alternatives or discontinue treatment entirely. Beyond blood sugar control, Novo Nordisk also states that the Ozempic pill is also approved for reducing the risk of major cardiovascular events, including heart attack, stroke, or death, in adults with type 2 diabetes who are at elevated risk. Real-world cardiovascular benefits are linked to weight loss, improved blood pressure, and reduced inflammation, Ali notes. Some studies have shown a reduction in major adverse cardiovascular events by 18 to 20%. Patients with diabetes, obesity, and existing atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease stand to benefit the most. Now we are switching over to the Diabetes Self-Management magazine, and we will be reading this article by Gary Shiner, MS, CDCES, FADCES, called Diabetes Over Time, Why Blood Sugars and Insulin Can Act Differently with Age. So it starts off with a question that says, I am 83 years old and have had type 1 diabetes for almost 49 years. I'm wondering if you've come across this before. When my blood sugar is low, it seems to take longer than it once did to come back up. This often leads to overtreating and then high blood sugar later on. I've also noticed that it takes longer than it used to for insulin to bring my high readings down. Could this be related to my circulation? I've had heart disease since I was 58. And the answer, congrats on closing in on your 50th diaversary. That's something to be proud of. As we age, it's natural for digestion to slow down. This can help explain why it may take longer than it used to for low blood sugar treatments to kick in. Next time, try using glucose tablets or gel and letting them dissolve in your mouth, between your cheek and gum, or under your tongue, which can help speed absorption. Also, keep in mind that continuous glucose monitors, CGMs, often show a lag during rapid changes in blood sugar, especially when glucose is low. Using a finger stick to confirm that your glucose is rising can help prevent overtreating a low rather than relying solely on the CGM. Avoiding large glucose swings is particularly important as we age, especially for anyone with a history of heart disease. Long-term insulin can also affect how quickly insulin works. After decades of injections or infusions, it's common to develop areas of thickened tissue under the skin known as lipohypertrophy, which can interfere with insulin absorption. Avoiding these areas and rotating injection or infusion sites regularly is the best way to keep insulin working as effectively as possible. If absorption problems are widespread, you might ask your healthcare provider about inhaled insulin, or the brand name Afrezza. It works more quickly than insulin, given under the skin, although it isn't appropriate for everyone. The next question says, I've been told that insulin is only good for about a month once you start using it, and that you should throw the rest away after that. Is that really true? I take small doses and hate to waste so much insulin. Answer, this is a great point to bring up. The main reason insulin can't be used indefinitely, whether it's in a vial or a pen, is that it gradually loses potency once it is no longer refrigerated. Even exposure to typical room temperature can cause insulin to break down over time. The higher the temperature and the longer the exposure, the greater the loss of effectiveness. The big question is, how much is actually lost? Exposing insulin to very high temperatures, even for just a few minutes, can cause significant and rapid breakdown. In contrast, exposure to room temperature for several weeks usually leads to only a small loss in potency. The 28-day usage recommendation listed in most insulin package inserts, 42 to 56 days for some long-acting insulins, is based on manufacturers testing insulin at room temperature for that period and finding no significant problems. The limitation is that manufacturers stop their stability testing at that point, so they can't guarantee potency beyond that time frame. Many people use insulin longer than the manufacturer's recommended time frame without noticing issues, while others experience problems. Keeping insulin out of direct sunlight and away from extreme heat or freezing temperatures can help extend its functional life. If you choose to use insulin beyond the manufacturer's recommended period, check with your provider. Keep a close eye on your glucose readings and switch to a fresh vial or pen the moment you start to see readings that are higher than usual. Those answers came from Gary Sheener, who has lived with type 1 diabetes for 40 years. He was named 2014 Diabetes Educator of the Year by the American Association of Diabetes Care and Education Specialists. Have a question about diabetes? Email gary@integrateddiabetes.com. This next article is written by Laurel Washington, M.E.D., N.A.S.M., 700 ERYT, titled Understanding Strength Training: What Real Strength Means and How to Build It Safely. The term strength training is often used broadly, and it's commonly assumed that any form of resistance exercise builds strength in the same way. While most resistance training does improve strength to some degree, different approaches produce different physiological adaptations and serve different goals. What strength training really means? Strength training is often described as using resistance, such as weights, gravity, or machines, within a structured progressive program to improve physical capacity. While this broad definition is useful, it doesn't capture the important differences in how strength is developed. Moderate resistance with higher repetitions, such as 12 to 15 reps, can improve muscular endurance and general fitness. Training with heavier resistance and lower repetitions places greater demands on the nervous and musculoskeletal systems and is commonly used to build maximal strength. When strength is the goal, it helps to separate general resistance exercise from training that targets maximal strength. Strength-focused training typically uses heavier loads, lifted with a high level of effort for lower repetitions, often between 1 and 6 reps. This approach emphasizes force production and neuromuscular adaptation rather than endurance. Research shows that appropriately progressed strength training can improve bone density and physical resilience, which helps to reduce the risk of falls and fractures over time. Training at a higher level of effort can feel intimidating, particularly if it's unfamiliar or if age or past injury has shaped how we view our bodies. It's important to remember that maximal effort looks different for everyone and depends on where a person is starting. Using lighter weights or body weight movement is an effective way to build strength and movement skill, creating a foundation that can be progressively challenged with guidance from a conditioning specialist. Before beginning new strength exercises, start conservatively and prioritize proper form. If you have chronic pain, balance concerns, or medical conditions that affect movement, consult a qualified professional before progressing. Strength for life. Strength training doesn't require chasing maximum effort or lifting the heaviest weight in the room. It starts with meeting your body where it is, building skill and confidence, and progressing gradually over time. When approached thoughtfully, strength training can support resilience, independence, and long-term health at any age. And that information came from Laurel Washington, who is a movement specialist with expertise in yoga, strength conditioning, exercise physiology, and postural restoration. With over 12 years of experience, she helps individuals build self-awareness through mindful movement, functional training, and breath-focused body work. Next up, we have The Weight of Sleep: How Your Nightly Rest Shapes Hunger, Blood Sugar, and Energy Balance, by Nicola Davies, PhD. Sleep isn't just time off from your body's from your day. While you're asleep, your body is actively regulating many systems that support your health, including how hunger and energy are managed. When we don't get enough sleep, this balance is disrupted. Over time, poor sleep can make weight gain and metabolic problems more likely. One of the main reasons for this lies in how sleep affects hormones that control appetite. The role of appetite hormones. Two key hormones are involved: leptin, which helps signal when you're full, and ghrelin, which signals hunger. When people regularly sleep less than about 5 hours per night, they tend to have lower levels of leptin and higher levels of ghrelin compared with those who get closer to 8 hours of sleep. Studies have also found that when sleep is restricted, people consume an average of a few hundred extra calories per day compared with those who are well rested. Cravings, blood sugar, and energy use. Sleep loss can also influence what we crave. Being awake for longer creates more opportunities to snack, and changes in appetite signaling can make energy-dense, highly palatable foods harder to resist. At the same time, lack of sleep makes it harder for the body to use insulin effectively, which can disrupt blood sugar management and make it easier for excess energy to be stored as fat. It doesn't stop there. Feeling tired often leads us to move less during the day, meaning we may burn less energy at the same time that intake has increased. What this means for weight management. When it comes to supporting a healthy metabolism, sleep is just as important as diet and physical activity. Aiming for 7 to 9 hours of good quality sleep each night gives your body time to reset and rebalance the systems that regulate hunger, energy use, and blood sugar. If your sleep feels irregular or hard to control right now, that's okay. Many people go through periods when sleep is disrupted by stress, illness, work schedules, or life changes. What matters is recognizing that sleep isn't a luxury. It's a vital part of how your body restores itself and functions. Even small, steady adjustments can make a difference. Going to bed a little earlier, keeping your wake-up time consistent, and limiting late-night light and noise can all help protect your sleep over time. Make sleep part of your health routine. Looking after your sleep is one of the kindest things you can do for your body. When sleep is supported, appetite signals are steadier, energy is more consistent, and healthy choices feel more manageable. Over time, prioritizing rest can make it easier to care for your weight and your overall health. Once again, that information came from Nicola Davies, PhD, who is a behavioral scientist and author of I Can Beat Obesity, Finding the Motivation, Confidence, and Skills to Lose Weight and Avoid Relapse. Next up is this article from Allison Massey, MS, RD, LDN, CDCES, titled Snack Smarter: How to Build Snacks that Steady Energy and Curb Cravings. Americans love to snack. According to 2017 to 2020 NHANES data, about 95% of U.S. adults eat at least one snack daily, with most having two or more each day. Compared with non-snackers, snackers often consume more calories, carbohydrates, and added sugars, but they may also get more nutrients such as vitamin C and potassium. Snacks don't have to derail health goals. Thoughtful choices can satisfy hunger while adding valuable nutrition. The first step is understanding why you're reaching for food, paying attention to true hunger rather than habit or boredom. Not every urge to eat is physical hunger. True hunger tends to build gradually and is accompanied by low energy, difficulty concentrating, or stomach sensations. Cravings, on the other hand, often feel sudden and specific, such as wanting something crunchy or sweet. Pausing briefly to identify which you are experiencing can help you choose a snack intentionally rather than automatically. Here are 5 ways to build snacks that support steady energy and curb cravings. Snack with intention. Individual nutrition needs vary. If you use insulin or medications, that affect blood glucose, talk with your healthcare team about how snacks fit into your plan. Tip number one, right-sized snacks. Snacks contribute about 24% of daily calories on average. Your needs depend on activity level, goals, and medical considerations. For less active adults, about 100 to 200 calories. For active adults or teens, about 200 to 300 calories. Think of snacks as a bridge between meals, enough to prevent excessive hunger but not replace a meal. A simple guide. Snacks often provide about 10 to 20% of daily calories, with many people doing best toward the lower end of that range. For example, someone eating 1,500 calories per day and having two snacks may target about 150 calories per snack. Tip number two, build around protein. Protein helps promote fullness and supports muscle repair, making it especially helpful between meals. Whole or minimally processed sources are often satisfying and affordable. Protein-rich snack ideas. Dairy. For milk, one cup or about 8 grams has about 8 grams of protein, plus calcium, vitamin D, and potassium. Greek yogurt has about 14 to 18 grams of protein per 6 ounces. Cottage cheese has about 14 to 20 grams per 6 ounces. And cheese has about 6 to 10 grams of protein per ounce. And firmer cheeses contain more protein. Animal-based snacks that are protein-based. Jerky, 9 to 12 grams of protein per ounce, but watch out for sodium. Tuna has about 16 grams per 2 ounces, plus omega-3 fats. And hard-boiled eggs have about 6 to 7 grams of protein each. Some plant-based protein snacking options include edamame, half a cup shelled, which has about 9 to 11 grams of protein. About a quarter cup of nuts has 6 to 9 grams of protein. And about a quarter cup of pumpkin, sunflower, chia, and flax seeds has about 5 to 10 grams. And pumpkin seeds are among the highest in protein. Pair protein with fiber or healthy fat for better satisfaction. For example, yogurt with berries, nuts with fruit, cheese with whole grain crackers, or hummus with vegetables. This combination slows digestion and helps maintain steadier energy levels than carbohydrates alone. Tip number three, add fiber for staying power. Most Americans consume less than half of the recommended fiber intake. Snacks are an easy opportunity to close that gap without changing meals. Fiber supports fullness and steadier energy, especially when paired with protein or healthy fat. High-fiber snack ideas include berries with Greek yogurt, vegetables with guacamole, nuts or seeds, and whole grain toast with nut butter and chia jam. For a quick chia jam recipe, simmer 1 to 2 cups of frozen fruit with 2 tablespoons of chia seeds until thick. Add lemon juice and sweetener to taste if desired. And tip number 4, fat for satisfaction. Fat supports hormone production, cell structure, nerve health, and absorption of vitamins A, D, E, and K. It also increases satiety, or the feeling of fullness. Because fat contains 9 calories per gram, portions matter. Unsaturated fats support heart health, while saturated fats should be limited and trans fats avoided. Some heart-healthy fat choices include avocado or guacamole, nuts such as walnuts, almonds, peanuts, pecans, and hazelnuts, and seeds such as flax, sunflower, chia, and pumpkin. Combine these with protein or fiber-rich foods for balanced snacks. And the fifth and final tip is tame the sweet tooth. The dietary guidelines recommend limiting added sugars to less than 10% of daily calories, or about 50 grams per day in a 2,000-calorie diet. Children under age 2 should avoid added sugars entirely. Reading labels. Less than or equal to 5% daily value, or DV, added sugar is low, and more than or equal to 20% the daily value is high. Naturally, sweet options include fresh or frozen fruit, unsweetened dried fruit, but watch the portions, and fruit canned in juice. These provide sweetness, along with fiber and nutrients, helping reduce rapid energy spikes and crashes. A smarter way to snack. Snacking can be both enjoyable and supportive when done intentionally. Choosing foods that combine protein, fiber, and healthy fat while limiting added sugars helps maintain energy and satisfaction between meals. For people managing diabetes, balanced snacks can also help prevent large swings in blood glucose between meals, reducing both mid-afternoon crashes and pre-meal overeating. Smart snacking isn't only about filling nutrition gaps, it's also a chance to enjoy food while supporting your health. Once again, that all came from Lauren Massey, who is a registered dietitian and certified diabetes care and education specialist in Maryland. She blogs at flourishmyhealth.com. All right, this next article comes from the Mayo Clinic, titled, "An Often Preventable Complication of Diabetes, Diabetic Neuropathy, Symptoms and Causes." Diabetic neuropathy is a type of nerve damage that can happen with diabetes. Blood sugar, also called glucose, becomes high because of diabetes. Over time, high blood sugar can injure nerves throughout the body. Diabetic neuropathy most often damages nerves in the legs and feet. Depending on the affected nerves, diabetic neuropathy symptoms may include pain and numbness in the legs, feet, and hands. It also can cause problems with the digestive system, urinary tract, blood vessels, and heart. Some people have mild symptoms, but for others, diabetic neuropathy can be painful and disabling. Diabetic neuropathy is a serious health concern. It may affect up to half of people who have diabetes, but diabetic neuropathy can often be prevented, and people who have it can take steps to keep it from getting worse. The key is to tightly manage blood sugar and lead a healthy lifestyle. There are four main types of diabetic neuropathy. You could have one type or more than one type of neuropathy. The symptoms depend on the type of diabetic neuropathy you have and which nerves are affected. Usually, symptoms appear slowly over time. You may not notice anything is wrong until a lot of nerve damage has happened. Peripheral sensory motor neuropathy. This type of neuropathy also may be called distal symmetric peripheral neuropathy. It's the most common type of diabetic neuropathy. It affects the feet and legs first, followed by the hands and arms. Symptoms often are worse at night. They may include loss of feeling, also called numbness, or less ability to feel pain or temperature changes, a tingling or burning feeling, sharp pains or cramps, muscle weakness, being very sensitive to touch. For some people, even a bedsheet's weight can be painful. Serious foot problems, such as ulcers, infections, and bone and joint damage. Autonomic neuropathy. The autonomic nervous system controls blood pressure, heart rate, sweating, pupils, bladder, digestive system, and sex organs. Diabetes can affect nerves in any of these areas. That can cause symptoms including a lack of usual warning symptoms that let you know when blood sugar levels are low. This is called hypoglycemia unawareness. Drops in blood pressure when rising from sitting or lying down. This is called orthostatic hypotension. It causes dizziness or fainting. A fast beating heart while at rest. Bladder or bowel problems. Slow stomach emptying, also called gastroparesis. This can cause upset stomach, vomiting, a feeling of fullness, and a loss of appetite. Trouble swallowing. Changes in the way the eyes adjust from light to dark or far to near, more or less sweating than usual. Problems with sexual response. For instance, some people may have vaginal dryness or trouble feeling aroused. Others may have trouble getting or keeping an erection. Proximal neuropathy. This type of neuropathy also is called diabetic polyradiculopathy. It often affects nerves in the thighs, hips, buttocks, or legs. It can affect the stomach area and chest area. Symptoms often are on one side of the body. Rarely they spread to the other side. Proximal neuropathy may include serious pain in the buttock, hip, or thigh, weak and shrinking thigh muscles, trouble rising from a sitting position, and pain in the chest or the walls of the stomach area. Mononeuropathy. This type of neuropathy is also called focal neuropathy. It damages a single specific nerve. That nerve may be in the face, torso, arm, or leg. It's possible for mononeuropathy to affect single nerves in different parts of the body at the same time. Mononeuropathy may lead to trouble focusing or seeing two images of the same object, also called double vision, not being able to move one side of the face, this is called paralysis, numbing or tingling in the hand or fingers, weakness in the hands that may result in dropping things, pain in the shin or foot, weakness that makes it hard to lift the front part of the foot, this condition is known as foot drop, pain in the front of the thigh as well. The exact cause of each type of neuropathy is unknown. Researchers think that, over time, uncontrolled high blood sugar damages nerves and interferes with their ability to send signals. This process may lead to diabetic neuropathy. High blood sugar also weakens the walls of the small blood vessels called capillaries that supply the nerves with oxygen and nutrients. Risk factors. Anyone who has diabetes can get diabetic neuropathy, but these risk factors make nerve damage more likely. Poor blood sugar control, which can raise the risk of every medical complication that can happen with diabetes. Diabetes history. The risk of diabetic neuropathy rises the longer you have diabetes, especially if your blood sugar isn't well controlled. Kidney disease, being overweight with a body mass index of 25 or more. Smoking, which narrows and hardens the arteries, lowering blood flow to legs and feet. And high blood pressure and high cholesterol. And with that, that's all the time that we have left for today's reading of the diabetes update. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
This is Bird Note. A spider's web is an intricate piece of precision engineering, and the spider's silk it's constructed with is amazing. Made from large proteins, it's sticky, stretchy, and tough. So it's no surprise that many small birds make a point of collecting strands of spider silk to use in nest construction. Birds like hummingbirds, kinglets, gnatcatchers, and some vireos. Golden-crowned kinglets, among the smallest of songbirds, build a tiny, square nest. They often use strands of spider silk to suspend the structure from adjoining twigs, like a tiny hammock. When a female ruby-throated hummingbird is building her nest, she collects the spider silk she needs by sticking it all over her beak and breast. When she reaches the nest site, she'll press and stretch the silk onto the other materials, such as lichen and moss, creating a tough, tiny cup. Spider silk not only acts as a glue, holding the other bits together, but it's flexible enough to accommodate the growing bodies of nestlings, and it's resilient enough to withstand all the bustle of raising those hungry babies. Where we might reach for duct tape, these birds turn to spider silk. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Hi, the Bay State Council of the Blind has available free Braille copies of a new publication from the CDC. It's entitled COVID-19 Vaccination Guidance, and this one-volume publication focuses on information about the vaccines and vaccine safety. To get your free copy, send your name and mailing address to kim.charlson@perkins.org. That's kim.charlson@perkins.org.